Test.
Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva. Alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad, king of his bedroom, Riley.
What? I don't know what to do with that.
King of
my bedroom.
That's true. Where else are you king of?
I don't know. It just sounds really awkward. I suppose you're not wrong.
Thank you. And also with us is the sire himself, Spencer Williams.
Okay, wait a minute.
What?
You're saying S-I-G-H-E-R, not S-I-R-E,
sure.
Which means father of children.
Either or.
Okay.
They both work for me.
Or king. I mean, really, it could be king.
I'm really just disturbed by this whole train, and I want off of it right now.
You can. This train has left the station. And speaking of which, we have just gotten back from an incredible press screening of a movie that seems to be getting a lot of buzz recently, and we went to go see it and had an incredible time. So I can't wait to talk about it. I don't know about you guys.
I can't wait. I mean, we've been waiting for this for a couple years now, so...
I'm super excited. Let's go.
Okay, I guess that's my cue. Eddie just, like, pointed at me, like, take it away. All right, I'm going to take it away like a
take
vast...
Take it away.
Like a vast melting pot of culture from around the globe, or at least the Sacramento area we call home. The Filmlosophers podcast is presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live each week at VGB Studios. If you like what you hear today, and hopefully you will, because if you don't, you'll just turn us off, and that makes us sad. But if you like it, maybe it's time to subscribe to the podcast. New episodes debut each Wednesday on Google Play, iTunes, Player FM, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Libsyn, and other platforms. Spencer, where can they find us online otherwise?
You can join the conversation at facebook.com/filmlosophers and twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Let us know what you think of our latest reviews and other movie news. And remember, you can also access our entire audio archive online at filmlosophers.com. And then you can catch up on all the latest episodes.
That's actually really good, Spencer. Wow. I'm
so inviting.
Right? I want to go listen to
it. I want to type in filmlosophers.com.
Well, like we said, we have a great show in store for you. And as we said, last week we had been anticipating this movie, and yeah, it's here. Well, it's not here for everybody. It was here for us.
I mean, it's basically here.
It's practically here. It's like Christmas.
Those who are wise will wait until it's here to listen to this episode because they don't want to be spoiled on anything.
It's true. Hmm. And we are talking about Black Panther, directed by Ryan Coogler. Like I said, we talked about Ryan Coogler last week. Did you just make a Coogler joke?
No.
No, he just made a Black Panther whisper jam.
Black Panther.
Yes. Directed by Ryan Coogler. We talked about the director last week and did a quick profile on his previous two movies. And we were really excited. So when this movie came about, we couldn't wait to get our chance. So, Chad, why don't you hit us with that official synopsis?
All right. After the death of his father, T'Challa returns home to the African nation of Wakanda to take his rightful place as king. When a powerful enemy suddenly reappears, T'Challa's mettle as king and as Black Panther gets tested when he's drawn into a conflict that puts the fate of Wakanda and the entire world at risk. Faced with treachery and danger, the young king must rally his allies and release the full power of Black Panther to defeat his foes and secure the safety of his people.
I think that about sums up the movie really well.
It's actually a really great summary.
Where'd you pull it from?
It's the official synopsis.
I smelled copywriting.
Directed by Ryan Coogler, as we said, the film stars Chadwick Boseman, Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o, Angela Bassett, Martin Freeman, Daniel Kaluuya, Sterling K. Brown, This Is Us, Forest Whitaker, and many others. This film had a really incredible cast. I think if there's one thing, like, right off the top, just to give kudos to, is the vast amount of really well-known people and performances in this film.
Yeah, I mean, you're even that list that you just said is missing several key performers in the movie, especially a couple of the ladies that we're going to talk about, because they were phenomenal.
All of them were just amazing.
So good.
Black Panther marks the 18th film released by Marvel Studios for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which means this is the... I forget what it is. It's a certain chapter. I think it's the sixth chapter in the third phase. It's really, really interesting. As well, the film also marks director Ryan Coogler's third collaboration with Michael B. Jordan after Fruitvale Station and Creed, of course.
Which we talked about in our previous episode. So if you want to hear more about those, go listen to that.
Filmosophers.com.
Nice. Black Panther.
Well, like we said, this is a movie that we've... I'm just going to keep this train moving forward. As we said, no, this was a film that we all had been anticipating. We even went to great lengths to talk about it last week in terms of our expectations for it and what we were hoping to have revealed to us or explored in terms of not just the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but the Black Panther mythos, if you will.
He comes from a nation that is make-believe. I mean, it's not a real African nation.
Which you would be surprised to learn not too many people know.
You think a lot of people think it's a real place?
There's a lot of people who think Wakanda is a real place.
Sorry to burst all of those people's bubbles, but...
it's true.
It's a mythical land in the heart of Africa, and it's actually really... it's beautiful the way that they bring it to life in this movie. We'll get into it more later, but they really have found a way on screen, at least, to make it a melting pot of various different cultural traditions, clothing styles, etc. It's quite beautiful.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we've noted before one of the things that Ryan Coogler does is he's a very keen eye for his locations and his cinematography and the way he sees. And like Chad said, we'll get into that later, but that is really one of the biggest highlights.
It's a strength of his for sure.
Oh, yeah. So obviously, when we were coming into this film, there were a lot of expectations. There was a lot of thoughts. We voiced most of them last week. And it's interesting to even still, though, talk about it here in terms of expectations, because in all honesty, there's the hopes of what you're wanting to see, but I'm going to be honest. With most films, including superhero films nowadays, you can't put too many expectations. I think I've been burned by DC more than I want to share about.
We've shared plenty.
Anymore.
Shared plenty.
So I was really, one of the things I was expecting with this film was just to see another great Marvel film that has been continuing. It's been the most consistent thing coming out of Marvel in terms of their films is great storytelling. I was expecting a great story to be told. Because if you look at all the previous Marvel films, or most of them, I'm pretty sure there are people who will pick and choose and say, oh, that one was a whatever. But most of the Marvel films, if not all, have great story hearts. Hearts that, you know, just really great stories altogether.
Definitely. I mean, they as a company, as a studio, they focus hardcore on story. Mm-hmm. Character development, story development, those are big... components of the Marvel formula, if you will. They don't just go for exciting plot point followed by another exciting plot point and a massive effects budget.
Yeah,
they have all those things, but
Michael Bay doesn't work for them. Just saying.
What I loved about this film, similar to how Guardians of the Galaxy, the first Guardians of the Galaxy, really hit a new tone in the midst of Phase 2. Black Panther hits an all-new tone in the midst of, at the tail end, actually, of Phase 3. It really sets the stage for new things to come that you have not seen yet. And I know I said this before going to see the film, like, I want to see Black Panther, the character, become the new, like, banner leader of the Avengers, the MCU franchise. I think that he just has everything as a character and a family of characters. They have everything going for them with this property. There's the newness, but there's also that touch of like legacy and oldness
mm-hmm.
that something like Guardians doesn't really have, aside yeah. from the fact that, you know, some of the, you know, like the Collector is a really old character. And you could get into his backstory, but you don't really need to. So it's really more futuristic and new. But here you've got ties to actual cultures of the Earth.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
and a
yeah.
feeling of history. At the same time, seeing all this futuristic tech and everything that makes it feel very fresh and very new in ways that Guardians never would, because Guardians is set in outer space, you know, as is Thor Ragnarok, which shows you some of that outer space kind of angle as well. But I think it's really great here. I was sitting the whole time thinking like, okay, then this is a place that we need to return to, like as we head into phase 4. We need to come back to Wakanda. Like, there's yeah. a lot. There's a lot of richness here to keep exploring.
Which, if anything, the trailer for Infinity War definitely shows that. As there's
definitely.
A huge battle in
Love
Wakanda.
That. It's yeah. like a, it's like a promise that you didn't realize you wanted them to make.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because the trailer came out before this movie came out. But it's like now that we've seen this movie, it's like thank you for promising that we're going to see more of Wakanda, because it is absolutely amazing.
Oh True. Yeah.
What about you, Spence? Did you have any expectations before, aside from what we talked about last week, anything that you may have had it going through the mind while we were sitting in the theater?
No, it was just a week of me dodging spoilers and like any type of article or content about the movie, because like I just heard such good rumblings about it, and I was not disappointed in the slightest. So no, no new expectations really.
And I think that's one of the great things that I can honestly, I could truly and wholeheartedly attribute to what Marvel has done. I mean, yes, Ryan Coogler is an incredible director and filmmaker, and the actors who portrayed the characters are incredible actors and actresses. They had incredible performances. But I think that's one of the things that we can definitely chalk up to a consistent and solid storyline that has lasted over 10 years since the first Iron Man, coming from the first Iron Man all the way through with the introduction of everybody else, Hulk, Captain America, Black Widow, a lot of these other incredible characters, and leading all the way up to ultimately the place where, you know, people have technically been superhuman since God knows when, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, people mm-hmm. have been, like, incredibly smart. There's technology that's beyond anybody's expectations. Like, you know, you can possibly imagine, you know, Howard Stark or even Tony Stark, if he gets a chance to work there with,
sure.
you know, with Shuri. It's just, there's so many possibilities, and it's only possible by what Marvel has done since day one and how they plotted out and created what has become like an empire, if you will.
For sure, yeah. It's definitely an empire.
So, with that, we're going to dive in and jump in on this review. And one of the things that I want to talk about right away before, you know, we get into a lot of the other aspects of, like, the cinematography and the director, because obviously the director is a very big shining part of the film. He's obviously the one who creates the vision and, you know, engages and just executes it. And that's what you end up in the final product, aside from the little bit of nudging here and there from the studios. More than most, it's his vision. But before that, I mean, you have the characters, and the characters in this film are incredible. Mm-hmm. I can honestly say I don't think there is one person in this entire film that I was like, eh, I could do less with him, or I could do without that, or I could have done without these things. I mean, am I the only one? I mean, what do you think?
Oh, Spence? No, I like... Everyone was so great, especially Shuri. I love her because she just nailed like being a little sister, because she did things I could see my little sister doing. So like,
she even looked a little bit like your little sister.
A little
like,
bit, yeah.
I just was like, huh. Oh wait.
So for those of you who don't know, Shuri is the younger sister of T'Challa,
right?
Who is the Black Panther. For the bulk of this movie, at least. Mm-hmm. You do see some of his father as the Black Panther before him in a flashback sequence in the beginning. And then there's some, you know, usurping of the throne kind of storyline that happens in the midst. But Shuri is essentially smarter than Tony Stark.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh,
that's
yeah.
just, that's an established fact within the storyline. And she runs the scientific division of the secret Wakanda. Because the interesting thing about Wakanda, the way that they've got this portrayed in the comics, Wakanda was always an isolationist nation, mm-hmm. but not necessarily a fully hidden nation. They just didn't talk to anybody else as a matter of policy for a long, long time, many generations. Here in the film, we see two different Wakandas. One that we've seen in Age of Ultron already, which is sort of the public face of Wakanda, which is that of a third world country, very underdeveloped. And basically that is their sleight of hand. That's the entire reason that Wakanda does that. And then they have this entire camouflaged inner culture and society of Wakanda that is incredibly advanced, way beyond anything else that exists on Earth. And they keep that part a secret. And so Shuri, the younger sister, she is essentially the one in charge of the continuing advancement of their society, using all this tech that even somebody like Tony Stark has never seen before.
And I think it has been established in the prelude comic to Infinity War that she actually is the smartest person in the world. So that's really,
and she's so stinking delightful too.
Oh yeah.
Like, I don't think she just was fun from beginning to end. I loved every instance of her. What about you, Chad? Were there anybody else that really stood out for you?
Everybody had standout moments, which was one of the great things. I mean, not every film that involves so many characters, obviously the biggest, most important thing of a film like this is to, establish, well, the world, number one, but especially the life path, if you will, of the main character, Black Panther.
Yeah.
So, like, you've got some of his father's past and some things that come back to bite them and his ascension to the throne and the challenges that exist to that. And so that's the main thrust of the story. But all around him are these other incredible standout characters.
Oh, yeah.
Like, incredible. You don't have really a B player either in the cast or in the script, which is very rare. You can have, like, sure, Ant-Man had Michael Douglas, and you think, oh, prominent performer. His role wasn't really that big. He was, like, the mentor teacher person who was smart, but it was like, you know, anybody could have done that role. Here you have these characters that are fully brought to life. Spencer, afterward, you and I talked for a bit about how realistic they felt.
Oh, yeah.
Like well-rounded human characters.
I feel like I could know some of these characters in real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's rare, especially when you're dealing with a blockbuster, tentpole franchise kind of film. You oftentimes do get characters who get short shrift just because there's not room to expand their territory within the story. But I don't know if it's because they just wrote it really well and Coogler is that kind of a director, which I think he is, to say, no, your job is to fully embody a human being who is in this place in this society, whose motivations are this, this, and that. And he works so directly with them in getting those motivations into the subtext of the characters that they come out anyway. Or if they just found such phenomenal performers that it's a whole pot of gold. I mean, I know I'm borrowing like a leprechaun phrase, and that's, that's just because it's what came to mind. But, like, there is gold everywhere in the cast. I think standouts for me, definitely Shuri, Letitia Wright. Also Okoye, who is the general and the leader of the Dora Milaje, who is so incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, I would watch 10 movies of just her. Like, just her. And she's a supporting character. She's a prominent supporting character, but, like, no question, if they made a movie about Okoye, I would be sitting in the seat probably for multiple viewings of the movie. She's that good. And that played, obviously, by Danai Gurira from
Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead. Thank you. I'm like, I'm drawing a blank because I'm so excited about this character. She was absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
Like, I would not cross that woman.
Oh, no.
At all. Also, Lupita Nyong'o, who plays a character called Nakia, who starts out as a spy, Turns out she has a history with T'Challa, a romantic history that did not materialize. And so they've got a certain dynamic. She was phenomenal. Everybody has a moment. Every single person who has a line has a moment, basically.
And it's so true because, like, even from the get-go, Chad had mentioned there was a flashback scene at the beginning or whatnot. It's funny that you had mentioned also about Guardians of the Galaxy because this has that similar format, but I think its ability to engage you and just connect right from the beginning has that, just like Guardians did that as well. This film has that exact same ability and momentum right from the get-go because you have an incredible performance of Sterling K. Brown right at the get-go, who plays a character named N'Jobu. And his performance, although he's in the film for a minimal amount of time, it's not a large amount of time, but in every scene that he's in, he steals it. And it all originates from that beginning scene. And so it's just, there is no throwaway character, just plain and simple, in this film. From Martin Freeman's reprisal of his role, Agent Ross, from the CIA, to even Andy Serkis's character of Ulysses Klaw, he was really interesting. He brought back a lot more depth to that character than what was seen in Civil War. Was it Civil War? No, it was
Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron, that's right.
Claw, but Martin Freeman's character was from Civil War. Captain America Civil War, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of great, you know, just outstanding performances. It's like you look at a lot of these characters, and they're not just stand-in-the-background type of, you know, people in this film. They have substantial parts throughout the entire storyline. Everybody is that, you know, important thread that, although it seems small, it runs into this beautiful tapestry of this film. And I think it's difficult for most directors, in my mind, most filmmakers, to actually pull that off. But I think in the case of this film, it does it flawlessly. Like, without a doubt.
It's hard sometimes to do justice to the performer that you've selected for a certain role when it's not the main role or even one of the main supporting roles, you know, like a Sterling K. Brown. His role is very important. You don't even know in the beginning exactly how important his role is. You learn it along the way, which is something that's really special too. A lot of times with superhero films that are wanting a mainstream audience, you kind of have to hit people over the head with, oh, well, you want to pay attention to that guy because of this, this, and this. And you know in the beginning of the film, in that opening sequence that takes place in Oakland in 1992, which I love the numerous tie-ins to Oakland that happen in this movie.
Yeah.
Because just the phrase Black Panther has some very strong connections, for different reasons, very strong connections to Oakland. So the fact that they embraced that and gave you several nods toward that level of like subtext for kind of the tonal moments of the story. But like, you know, one level of importance for Sterling K. Brown's character in terms of who he's related to very quickly. But then you don't learn until later some other things that are important to the characters that are not in 1992, they're in the present day. And so it allows for those elements of the story to mature and air themselves out when it's appropriate for the story. Not like, hey, everybody, pay attention to this. It's going to be important later, and then move on. Like, you don't even know how important it is until later.
Yeah.
You don't know that one of the other characters in that scene is the younger version of another character that you see later, because you don't have to know right then exactly who they are. It's got some richness to it when you get a bit of a reveal later, which is nice.
No, nothing?
No.
Okay, I'm just checking. No, because the thing is that, like, with this film, there's so much, and it's great to have the dynamic that we have in this team, because there are things that I pick up, but then, much like a diamond, there's another facet to it, and there's another aspect that you picked up, Chad, or Spencer picks up, and it's like, I don't want to miss out on an opportunity to really just gush about this movie, because I think one of the great things about this movie is that it really fits within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but then it doesn't fit. Because it's like, it's such an incredible piece. And not just in terms of like, because we've seen everything occur mostly in America, or everything that's been based in American culture, or this film just is, it, I don't know, it gushes with so many different aspects of diversity and the ability to create shining moments that it makes you speechless sometimes. I mean, I know there were times in the movie where I was like, wow, like I got lost in looking at everything and forgot that there's a story that's unveiling at the same time. You know, and that's one of the great things about how Ryan Coogler went about creating Wakanda. I mean, it's just it's picturesque.
Well, the people he hired for his team.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, he does not necessarily have the costume design eye or the production design eye.
Let's talk about those costumes for a second.
Yeah, he hired people who like deserve serious recognition for those elements.
Like, there's a part where like the scene is at like what would you even call it? The challenge for T'Challa. Oh, yeah.
The ritual combat.
Yeah. And like everyone is just in this garb. And I was like, I just stopped paying attention. I was like looking at what people are wearing because it's just amazing. You have Forrest Whitaker out here in this like purple outfit. And then you have all the women in like these fancy dresses. It just looked so amazing. And like parts of it were just things that you would assume that are out there in Africa right now.
Yeah, definitely. And they have... in the very beginning, there's like an opening cinematic before the flashback to, you know, Oakland 1992. Yeah. There's an opening cinematic that introduces you to some of the backstory of like where the Black Panther even came from, the concept of a warrior priest king, and how Wakanda got its technology and all of that. And it mentions the tribes. There were five tribes in Wakanda. Mm-hmm. One of them kind of went into the mountains and left the rest of them, and the other four are integrated. But during the challenge sequence, all the tribes come in their traditional garb and their, you know, unique colors, unique like accessories, like the, is it the river people that Nakia is from that have the large plates in their lower lips? And so the costume design team took influence from different African cultures in the real world and integrated elements from multiple real world cultures in Africa into this blended, multicolored, vibrant, beautiful, like integrated culture of Wakanda.
And it super shows too.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it feels very authentic, even at the same time that it feels like, you know, an interpretation of authenticity.
Yeah. And I think one of the great things to recognize in those particular scenes, especially the scene that Spencer's talking about, is there was no sense of like worn out or worn looks or like, you know, fading colors. Everything was so vibrant and crisp, and everything looked like it was made that morning. You know, like it was beautiful. And I think it really does add a lot of the you know, a lot to a scene when you have incredible costumes like that, because of the fact that you want to do justice to not only what you're trying to represent, but what you actually are representing. You know, when you set out to really do what you're wanting to do and what you're telling people you're going to do, you want to make sure you do right by so many other people. And I think this is one of the aspects that a lot of people overlook. I mean, not many people think about like, okay, I'm going to do a period piece, whatever. Let's just get some old clothes, or let's get some. I mean, there's love and care that go into that. And there's appreciation when you have a director who shows that appreciation and recognizes that, you know, this person has more than just, you know, monetary mindset for the film. It's beyond that. It's a passion project. It's something that he loves.
Well, and it's definitely one of those like, this in particular is a property. If you're going to do it, you better do it right.
Oh yeah.
Like you better do it right. It is beyond time to have a film like this with this kind of a stage presence, if you will, in the cultural mindset. So you'd better do it right.
And in terms of doing it right as well, I mean, obviously Wakanda is an African nation, and one of the things that you need to make sure you get correct is where your location is. And I don't know if either of you know where they filmed it, if they filmed it on location, you know, somewhere in Africa, or if they just... all I know is that place looked incredible. Like, it looked so beautiful. I'm now looking up travel locations or travel opportunities to go to Africa to find places, like, because it looks so incredible. Like, from the scenes where you have, like,
enjoy your green screen soundstage in Georgia.
You know what?
No, they did some on location filming. They did. I believe they did some in Australia because they had a deal with, you know, because of Thor Ragnarok. They had a multi-month, multi-picture deal. So they try to, you know, since they're filming movies all the time, movies plural, they go to the same location and do different things. They went to Korea for some of it, similar to when they did Age of Ultron, filmed some sequences in Korea. So they still had the film credit there and the tax breaks and everything. So they have a sequence that's in Korea, South Korea. You know, they did... sound stages in Atlanta and, you know, whatever. They did quite a few things stitched together to make this unique world.
Mm-hmm. But it's very beautiful. Like, some of the overhead shots that they have, like when they're flying into Wakanda or they're flying through the hills and the valleys where there are people riding on horseback, you know, waving down the plains, or, you know, there's people that are, you know, herding sheep, or it seems organic. I think is the word I want to look for. It seems very organic. Like, those particular scenes, like, because of the input of those, my mind truly thought this was real. Like, this is a real place. Like, Wakanda is on the next travel brochure somewhere. Like, it gave me a sense of engagement. Like, okay, I can believe this. Like, this is legit.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I mean, minus they're like spaceship airplanes.
Yeah, I mean, hey, Elon Musk is on his way, you know.
Yeah. I think I missed my moment earlier because I can't help. I want to go back to these costumes a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
The costume design for this film is unlike anything you've ever seen ever for a superhero film specifically, but also I think for like a popcorn flick. I mean, Marvel does really, really, really good popcorn flicks, but they need to get a lot of people in the seats, and they need those people to want to come back and bring their friends, because that's how expensive the movie was. But most of the time, those dollars are spent mostly on the performers and the effects, especially the effects. Here, I mean, these costumes are extraordinary. Like, you can get lost in this world. Like, just show me the marketplace. I don't care if Black Panther's there at all. Like, just show me what it's like to walk through the marketplace.
Yeah,
and
be
on the maglev train that runs, you know, floats above the ground and runs through the entire city. And, like, all of this, it's very, very rich. And the Dora Milaje with their shaved heads, very distinctive. The tattooing, very distinctive. The weaponry and the different tech elements that are, like, futuristic and old at the same time.
I mean, it's
this beautiful collision of styles that totally works, that could have totally not worked, but they pulled it off.
Yeah, I think that was one of the biggest concerns in terms of how do you portray a technologically advanced nation while still holding tight to traditions?
Right.
And that's one of the things I think that's really unique about this film, is that they are able to balance that really nicely in terms of having like having a spear. They show a scene where they're examining a spear that looks very much like something you would find either in an African tribe currently, or even in a museum piece, you know. But at the same time, they're talking about how not only is it a spear, but it's also like some kind of sonic wave blaster. And I'm like, that's a cool sonic wave blaster. And so it's not so much like, it doesn't focus on, let's see, like the scene from the first Avengers when Agent Coulson has that big old machine gun that, you know, has, you know, the thing that was based off of the first Thor film, you know, and it's huge. And he's like, I don't even know what this thing does. What does this button do? But it's huge and it's big and it looks, you know, imposing. And that was the focus in that scene. In this particular film, the weapons are not the focus. It's like, I want you to recognize that this is a tool and a weapon, but this is not what our primary, this is what the film's primary focus is on.
Well, and that goes back to the idea of, Like, what is power? What is strength? Like, what is good leadership?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's power that's held in restraint. Like, I mean, the Dora Milaje, you do not cross those women. You do not. You will die. But their goal is not to go out and wage war.
Yeah.
Their goal is to preserve and protect and only use their destructive capabilities when they have to.
Yeah.
Like, it's that power held in check.
Yeah.
That's real power. And you see that again and again and again in all the different skill sets of the characters, the mindsets of the characters. It's really a stunning display of, now, not to say that there aren't a few shortcomings in the film. I mean, let's not overpraise. You know, there are a few things that, you know, maybe, like, I wasn't a huge fan, for example, of the battle rhinos. Cool idea, but I didn't think the movie needed them. I thought that they were handling things really, really well with people. They didn't need CGI rhinoceri. but aside from some small little moments like that, there's just a lot of stuff that works.
About those battle rhinos.
Love it.
I knew I was looking at Spencer and Spencer's eyebrow.
Now, let's not leave
in
these battle rhinos just yet.
Okay. Now, like, when I first saw them, I was like, that's awesome. But then I was like, that's impractical. Because, like, they're big, giant rhinos. Plus, at one point, a rhino stops because it recognizes a person.
Yeah.
They don't seem like they're
which
the
is
best
so good.
For, like, I have, like, a sonic spear. And you have a battle rhino. That doesn't seem like a good matchup, but like I do like the attempt.
Yeah, it was definitely something that we haven't seen
yeah,
before.
Yeah, it was cool.
And that's battle rhino. I want one now.
I'm sure they'll make toys.
Oh,
ooh,
for sure.
Get your toy battle rhino for Christmas.
Write that down, Chad. We know what to get him for Christmas.
Toy battle rhino. Got it.
But going back to something you were saying earlier in terms of how it portrays power and not just power in itself, but wielding it in responsible ways and having it. I think that's something that kind of flowed from beginning to end in terms of not just having the power to hold back, but also having the power to give in time of need. And that was the delicate balance that this film really tried to portray well enough, because early on in the film you see that there is a little bit of a dispute in terms of making Wakanda available to everybody rather than just keeping it to itself and hiding, and I think that's a really good through point through the entire film in terms of recognizing power is knowing how to balance those two. And I think that was a great throughway for this entire film.
I would also say self-awareness. Very,
yes.
Very rarely do we see characters who, by the intent of the storytellers, the filmmakers behind the scenes, by our own like machinations in writing scripts and doing the storyboarding and ultimately filming the movie, like they need to have self-doubt and they need to be called into question and their motives are questioned and all of this stuff. There is so much strong, fantastic, beautiful self-awareness in this movie. Like you've got, I mean, across the board, T'Challa is very clear on what his role is and why he was born to do this. Nakia, part of their dispute, the reason that their romantic efforts sometime in the past, that you don't get flashbacks to that, but they reference it a few times. Part of the reason it didn't work out for them is because her path, her calling, if you will, her purpose shifted, and she can't not do that thing. She can't give up that path to be with him, even though she still loves him and he loves her, but she can't give away her purpose in life. And I think seeing characters who embrace their purpose and their role so completely is desperately missing in most cinema. And it's really wonderful to see it here.
Especially for women, like romantic characters, because usually at some point in the movie, they'll like either go to the man's side or change their mind about something. She did not.
She didn't.
Stuck to her guns
all the way,
the whole way, and he changed his mind.
Right.
So, and yeah. I thought that was fantastic.
Or even somebody like Okoye, the leader of the Dora Milaje. She has a very rough go about two-thirds of the way through the movie because there's a change in the power dynamic, and she has to go against her heart, if you will, because there's a new player on the throne. I mean, right. Spoiler alert, T'Challa isn't on the throne the entire movie. So, I mean, he's not off of the throne the entire movie, but he's not on the throne for the entire duration of the movie. There's an interplay. There's a challenge after the challenge, right? So you've got the bad guy, the actual bad guy of the movie, Eric Killmonger, Michael B. Jordan, does usurp the throne at one point. And we won't give away what happens after that. But as the leader of the Dora Milaje, she has to remain loyal to the throne, not to the individual sitting on the throne. She wants to be loyal to the good king, T'Challa, and all of the friends that she has connected to him. But her duty calls her to defend the throne and sets her against her friends for a time. And it's just to see a character like her wrestle with it actively right in front of your eyes. Yeah. She did such a beautiful job of showing the tension and explaining why she had to stand where she stood, because otherwise they have no purpose. Like, the Dora Milaje may as well not exist. If they're not going to defend the throne, regardless of who sits on it, if they're going to play favorites, they might as well not exist. They're no longer fulfilling their purpose. And to see characters do that is extremely rare.
Mm-hmm. Normally, like, in, like, certain movies where there's tension, like, at least I feel this way, certain characters will just make weird choices to, like, further the plot along. And you're like, well, why did you make that choice?
Right.
I'm not just talking about the Maze Runner, but like,
but you are kind of also talking about the Maze Runner.
But like in this movie, like everyone, like when people have like tension about like two conflicting things, for the most part, it makes sense. Like why they're conflicted about something and like the choices they make. Like I could follow why she did it, and it made sense to me, which was great.
Yeah, and it like Chad said, it adds to the inner turmoil that she's facing in terms of her loyalty to her duty or her loyalty to the people that she loves and cares for. And that does come back around in terms of her dynamic for later on in the film. And you see her face that again. And it's a really incredible instance. But I think that's another aspect of, we've been kind of dancing around it for a little while, but now that we have an opportunity, that's another aspect of Ryan Coogler's just field of expertise when it comes to filmmaking, because the man, we've seen him do, you know, art imitating life, so to speak, with Fruitvale Station.
Sure.
We've seen him, you know, in a action sequence with Creed, creating an action film, that sort. This type of film is kind of, in my mind, takes a little bit of both of those films in terms of standing on principles and standing on what it means in terms of just the world around us and what is happening. And it takes a lot of the dialogue and the poetry, if you will, that he used for the script writing in Creed, and he created, you know, what you now have today.
Well, I think that there's always an opportunity when you're dealing with some sort of fantastical genre, be it science fiction or fantasy or superheroes or whatever, that's kind of the world as it's not. That opens doors that you don't get in a Fruitvale Station, and you don't even get in a Creed. Creed was a fictional story, but it was set in the very real world. Here, not only do you have a created world, you have a fictional country within a real world continent in a created world. So you've got layers of opportunity, let's say, and it allows you to get away with stuff like having some blanket statements. Several of these characters make very strong blanket statements that obviously are meant to cause the audience to reflect on the status of things in our world today.
Yeah.
But it's not as I can't think of the word I'm trying to think of. It's not as controversial
as
it would be if they were sitting in a coffee shop in Los Angeles or New York City or London, which we do have a sequence in London. And I quite frankly, when we hit the London sequence, I was like, oh, we have to watch a real world place. I was really wanting this to all be in Wakanda.
Which, thankfully, it doesn't spend too much time in London, because I think I felt the same way. I'm like, oh, thank God, we're gone. Okay, we're going back to Wakanda.
But the beautiful thing is, all the color leached out of it. Did you notice?
Yeah, oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, when you transition for, it's like a five-minute sequence. It's not too long, but, like, it's almost all white in terms of the color scheme. The walls, the way that the city grid is, it's like grays and off-whites and maybe a little pop of color from an ambulance, right? But it's mostly the only colorful things in the frame are the artifacts from African cultures in the museum.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was brilliant because you literally, you're sitting there like, wait a minute, it was so pretty just a second ago, and now it's so bland. I want the pretty stuff again. Like, I want the visual feast that you just gave me. And then, of course, they do get back to that. So don't fear. Yeah. But, you know, those are decisions too. Those are creative decisions that are made to make a point.
And if there's one thing we've recognized with Creed and with Fruitvale Station as well, it's that Ryan Coogler has a very specific eye. Like, when he is creating a scene, every single aspect of that scene is intentional. From like Chad said, from the removal of you know, vibrancy from a scene to, you know, the small littlest you know, makeup work that's been done on some person individually, or, you know, the artwork that some tribal person may have on their face, or even the way their people look in contrast to other people.
Or having Shuri, who is like everybody's spirit animal, say, oh, good, another broken white guy to fix.
Yeah, like, that was hilarious.
I mean, literally, like, she can get away with that because, number one, she's so darn likable. But number two, it's she's not in a hospital in Atlanta. She's in, like, the mega brain of Wakanda, right? Like, it totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are things that happen in this movie that you couldn't get away with necessarily in other types of storytelling. But because you're here in this created space, the more the merrier. I mean, bring it on.
Spence, and I'm going to kind of out you out right now.
No.
So as we saw this film, I sat between Chad and Spencer, and I'm glad you guys gave me that space. I did come late to the screening, but you guys left a space right in the middle of both of you guys. And as you both know, I love watching other people watch a movie, and that's just one of the joys I have. And there were several times where I happened to turn a glance at Spence, and it seemed like you were really moved by this movie. Like, not to call you out, not to make it a comedic point.
I think we're a bit past that.
No. This is done in respectable context, okay? But, like, I want to know, for you, as this film, you know, unveiled and we saw it from beginning to end, and as we began to just kind of reflect in the credit moments of, you know, while we were waiting for the end credit scenes, you know, while we were reflecting back on what we had just seen, it looked like you were moved deeply by this movie.
Yeah. And I'm going to try to get through this without crying.
Oh, man.
But, like,
way to go, Eddie.
It was great to see, like, just, you know, someone who looked like me up there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, representation really matters. And, like, as a kid, you know, when I'm watching TV, there's just, like, black guys being arrested by cops, or you're either Steve Urkel or Carl Winslow. And, like, that's a really narrow field.
Yeah.
So, like, it just made me really happy that this was, like, an awesome movie that just had, like, people who look like me and talk like me in some aspects that I could just identify with. And we need more of that for, like, not just black people, but for, like, everybody. Because everyone should be able to feel like that. Like, they can see themselves in, like, just characters on the screen.
Yeah. And it's true. It's and like I said, this movie is so unique in what it offers to people and what it offers in terms of the individual aspect of what you see. Like, for Spence, you know, you saw your perspective in terms of seeing this type of superhero, seeing an actual black superhero who doesn't have to worry about, you know, having the overused trope of the guy who's trying to save the day yet gets stopped by the cops at the same time, you know, or however. And in, like, with me, it was an incredible view of, like, just how diverse we can be in terms of cinema. Yes, we've been able to create other movies, and we've had some directors who've tried to venture out into doing that, but to have somebody who says, you know what, we don't have to do an art piece for it to have diversity, or for it to have something so incredibly bombastic, like, oh my gosh, we're going to have a black superhero, we're going to have a Mexican superhero, we're going to have, I mean,
I would say beyond the superhero genre, mm-hmm. At the end of this movie, I was like, I've seen a few films over the course of my entire life, a few films that were produced and distributed in Africa, like movies made in Africa, mm-hmm. about Africa for an African audience. I've seen a few, mm-hmm. but like, I want to see more. Like, after seeing, and I understand this is a created world, right? It's not the world as it exists, but it opens a door to a world that exists. Like, you know, Eddie, you were just mentioning, like, we should have, you know, more diversity in the cinematic world, because we already have it in the real world. Like, it's already the world that we live in. Why would we not show ourselves
exactly.
and tell ourselves these stories? I did want to read something really quickly. This is a quote from Kevin Feige, who is like the uber overhead person of Marvel Studios.
Yeah.
And it deals with the representation comment, like you were mentioning, Spencer. This is from a recent press junket, I believe. He said, it's something that's easy to take for granted. And Kevin Feige's a white guy. So am I. So I'm not him. I'm not popular and like ingenious like he is. I can't claim the same success as he has. But I can hear what he's saying here,
mm-hmm.
and what he gets to. He says, it's something that's easy to take for granted growing up in the United States as a white male, that my cinematic heroes look like me. I never thought they looked exactly like me because I'm not a big athletic hero, but they do. It's something that over the course of these 10 years, so the Marvel Cinematic Universe, over the course of these 10 years, having a certain amount of power over what type of movies are made and what type of actors we hire, I want everybody to have that feeling.
Mm.
Super cool. We don't take it for granted that people want to see themselves reflected in our heroes and our characters. That's been the case in the comics for years. And finally, that's the case in the movies and will only continue from here.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
And that's like, that's one of the great things.
I like the guy even more.
Yeah.
I already liked him a lot. I like the guy even more after reading that.
And things like that, it's like, I know, and you know what? We'll probably hear about it later, whatever. You guys can take your arguments and whatever. But it's one of the things that it's why we hear, and I'm gonna loop you into this, Spencer, because you're now on part of this team. But we tend to talk about Marvel so much, in not just in the fact that it's got longevity, because it does, and it's got more movies, because it does, mm-hmm. but also because of the fact that it's progressive. It's moving towards doing something that not many other cinematic universes have done, and that is creating a through line that starts from the beginning all the way to the end, and it's allowing itself to not be to not reflect the world that's around it, but giving an opportunity for the world to be changed by what it's doing. Mm. And we see it on a small scale, obviously, like with the comics, obviously the big uproar in the popularity of Iron Man comics we can all attribute to Robert Downey Jr.
Sure.
I mean, they even made him look like it in the comics. So, but aside from
that, at this point, there's no reason not to. That's what everybody thinks about. That is Tony Stark.
It's true. But I think it's incredible that one of the great things that this film does is it actually sets out to not just change the comic book market or the movie market, but it sets out to change the world itself, because it leaves you off with some really powerful words and some really powerful mindsets. And I think this is the type of film that really can begin something like that, when you have people who are just going to the movies for a good time, or going to the movies because this is the film right before Infinity War, so I need to make sure I'm all caught up. And and they come in the with the expectation of seeing a Marvel film, and they leave recognizing that the world is a lot bigger than just in the seats that we're sitting in that theater.
Well, yeah, because unlike my expectation going into this film, this film is not a cog in the machine.
No.
Like, it is its own property. There is no mention of the Avengers. There is no mention of Thanos. There is no mention of what I was hoping for, which was the final Infinity Stone. There's no mention of any of that.
No.
Obviously, it occupies the same cinematic universe as the other films. But this is a film about Black Panther and his people and his enemies. And it's allowed to just be that. So that whole tension of like, oh, this is the last new one before Infinity War hits in May, so it's got to have something in there. Nope. I mean, it has two sequences, mid credits and end credits, that don't, I mean, the end credit sequence shows one other character from the broader MCU, but it's not like, and there's the Infinity Stone that we were waiting to see.
Yeah.
No, it's just that character in Wakanda. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. That's the only nod that you have. Everything else about this movie during the bulk of the main runtime, it's Black Panther.
Yeah.
It's allowed to be what Black Panther is all about, not how does Black Panther fit into the broader story. We'll see that in May.
Yeah.
A lot of it too, because we've seen those trailers, and yeah, if y'all don't go see Black Panther, shame on you. But if you don't go see Black Panther and you do end up seeing Infinity War, yeah, you're still going to root for the Dora Milaje, because they they are just hardcore.
And I think I agree with you to a certain extent in terms of it not being a cog. I don't think of it as a cog, but I do think of it as a very important piece to a puzzle that we haven't seen the full picture yet of. Because obviously, yes, there's Infinity War, but to what you had said earlier, I think one of the great things, just from a Marvel standpoint, that this film does is it establishes, obviously, T'Challa as an incredible leader and a you know, just profound king of his people. But I feel like there's something bigger that this film builds towards, and I don't think we have an idea of what that is yet. But
I would agree to a point. I think my point is, you don't need Captain America, you don't need the Hulk, you don't need Thor, you don't need Iron Man, you don't even need Agent Ross. I mean,
no.
He has a role to play. That's Martin Freeman's character. He has a role to play, but like the fact that he came from another MCU movie, like it could be any agent. It could be any CIA agent who fulfills his purpose. He is just a recognizable face. You don't need a Spider-Man. You don't need an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. You don't need Nick Fury. These characters stand on their own, and they are allowed to stand on their own. And I think that's really, really cool.
So with that said, we're going to go ahead and go around this table and give our how many monocles we do, of course, as we normally do. So we'll go ahead and start with Chad. Chad, does it pass or fail, and how many monocles?
It super passes.
I was going to say, if you say anything other than...
I want to see this movie ASAP. As if,
yes,
I hadn't seen it already. Like I want to see it again as soon as possible. I was way impressed. I would say 4.8 monocles. I'm deducting 0.2 because of Battle Rhinos.
Battle Rhinos? That's what.
And I really wanted an Infinity Stone. I'm sorry. I was stuck on it. It was
so,
a soapbox.
So
I can't
it's
get
point,
off of it.
So it's 0.1 off for the rhinos,
yeah,
and 0.1 for the... Okay.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
It passes for me. I don't know if the rhinos are that big of a minus point for me, but I am going to give it a 4.5. It isn't a perfect Marvel film. I said Marvic. It isn't a perfect Marvel film, but it is a great Marvel film, and it is a great stepping stone to what things may come for not only the MCU, but for the world around it. And Spence?
Pass for me, yeah. But
you
I'm,
sure?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
Sure. This
just
movie
to make sure.
Passes.
I'm sure, he said.
And I'm going to give this movie a 5.
5?
Yeah, because people need to see this movie. And there's two things I want to quickly touch on. that we didn't talk about too much.
Yeah.
And one was the soundtrack for this
movie. Yes, thank you.
The soundtrack for this movie was so good. They just had like a heavy drum theme through like most of the movie, and it just meshed so well, and I loved it. And another thing I want to talk about is how you can connect to the characters. I didn't mention this earlier because I forgot I felt this way. But like, it was really easy for me to see like parts of myself in T'Challa. Mm-hmm. But it was also easy for me to see parts of myself in Eric Killmonger. And it was kind of an interesting...
Ooh, can you talk about that? I don't care that we're at the end of the episode. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Well, because like parts of like, not so much the I'm going to kill people part.
Thank you. That's good to know.
I hope not.
Thank you for clarifying.
But parts of his anger. Because some of his anger was about like injustice he saw for like how the marginalized were treated in other countries.
Yeah.
And like that kind of resonated with me like quite a bit. And I was like, I can see that.
Yeah.
Like, I can see that anger and like I understand it and I can kind of sympathize with it.
Yeah. Well, and there the film, I'm really glad you brought it up because many of the other reviews that have come out about the film have been praising the crew for creating a villain that you can kind of get behind.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Previous to this, Loki was kind of the most well-rounded villain in the MCU because you've got the whole brotherly conflict. He's technically an adopted orphan from a whole other race of beings and, you know, whatever. Like, so he's relatable in that way. Mm-hmm. Whereas somebody like, well, any of the other bad guys, they're just like the flavor of the movie, like flavor of the month.
So true.
And
it really is true.
And that's fine. Like that's bad guys kind of have that. Like that's a thing with bad guys. It's not necessarily a shortcoming. But when you get a strong point of connection with like, okay, I don't agree with his methods,
right,
but I understand his motivation and I can
exactly
relate to it. That's a good villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A good antagonist, you know, because you see then you as an audience member have the tension of he didn't have to be a villain. Like he is a villain because of the way that he acts out on that motivation and his response to the injustice. But you could easily see if he used his same skills and tools and whatever for other means.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, he's a really interesting, very compelling antagonist. Yeah.
And I don't want to give away like how his character resolves at the end of the film, but I think it's so incredible to see how Ryan Coogler was able to allow this type of anger and hatred and indignation that this person has had, how it looks logical to somebody who has been stewing in that for over 20 years, which goes towards the character that we're talking about, you know, seeing how it was a driving point for this individual. And it's not something that's so abstract or moot of a point in terms of what he was facing or how he felt. You know, it even comes to a point to where, you know, there's a mention of like something happens in Oakland and back in the 1992 scene and stuff like that. And there's a mention of like, oh, well, that kind of stuff happens. And it's like, he's not wrong.
There's a whole other layer that, you know, I don't want to go into too much because I don't want to overly spoil. But there's definitely repeated mentions of Agent Ross, Martin Freeman's character, saying, we taught him to do this.
Yeah.
Like, he actually professionally was employed by the United States government to destabilize other governments.
Yeah.
Like, that is his skill set. That's where his rage and his fury and his dissatisfaction all was funneled in a nationalistically productive way, let's call it. Mm-hmm. But now he's using it, you know, against the people of Wakanda, you know, and it's sort of like, okay, well, what is that trade-off? Like, why is it okay for the government of one country to say, oh yeah, we're going to send somebody in to like rig your elections and usurp your, you know, general's power and whatever special forces people are trained to do sometimes, or operatives, you know, totally off the record, off book, You don't ever even know all of the things that have happened in other nations. But like, if it's the U.S. deciding, then it's okay because we are in the U.S. and we think it's okay. But if it's an individual deciding to do those exact same tactics for his own personal reasons, suddenly he's off kilter and it's not acceptable. I think it does. It doesn't linger too much on any of those points, but it opens up some interesting, you know, options for broader conversations to happen after the film's, you know, over.
Well, and I think that particular character is a lot of what kinds of statements Ryan Coogler wanted to make in terms of the messages coming across in this film. And I think that's one of the biggest things in terms of what you just said that speaks out most is that with all that anger and hatred and indignation and everything that he's feeling, if it's for us, it's okay to have, and it's okay because we're using it for this. But moving in the opposite aspect of what we want, opposite of what we're wanting to do, it's, you know, then it becomes an issue. And I think that's one of the things that really sticks out for that particular character. But it is a really, like, awesome aspect of that particular character. And of course, going back to the broken record that we keep saying, Ryan Coogler's incredible ability as a filmmaker. So,
well, and one final point, this I think is me validating something that you were saying earlier, Spencer. In the final sequence of the movie proper, T'Challa, well, not the final sequence, one of the final sequences, T'Challa gives this beautiful speech at the United Nations. And that's the payoff of all the ugliness that you've seen up to that point. And that's one of those beautiful connecting points for somebody who's saying, I can see myself in both of these characters. Obviously, I think a lot of us would want to see ourselves as the hero. And at the end, after the big battle sequence, you have a hero who makes a different choice than what the villain chose and really paints a picture of the way we all should start going. I mean, it was a beautiful, like, speech. As a human being, I want to be like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Even as a, I think it's even kind of a little bit more meta than that in terms of, obviously, the speech that gives is in terms of what they can do for others and whatnot. And I think even in a meta standpoint, what this film can do for others in that aspect as well. I think that's another key point in terms of the takeaway from me. But it was a great film altogether, and obviously Spencer had a great time with his 5 monocles and Chad with his 4.8.
Battle rhinos. Those darn battle rhinos.
If you haven't had a chance
I
to get
I would have forgiven the lack of an Infinity Stone, and it would have been a rhinos. 5 if it wasn't for the battle rhinos.
If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, make sure you get them because the film debuts this Friday. So check it out. And when you do, drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers. And we'd love to hear what you think. If you agree, if you don't agree, if you think Chad doesn't know what he's talking about, I don't know what I'm talking about, or Spencer doesn't know what he's talking about, we'd love to hear
Spencer
it.
Spencer always knows what he's talking about, people. Do not step against Spencer. We will send the Dora Milaje after you.
This was a great film. And of course, like we said, you can access all of our previous episodes at filmlosophers.com. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.